and we have asked Amber and Chip to speak. I would like to introduce our first speaker, Amber S.
Attic name Amber.
Hey, Amber.
Thank you to the NEFA convention for asking me to come and speak. And thank you to all the people of service in NA who put this convention together. I know from personal experience it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of practicing spiritual principles to put something like this together, so thank you. I'm a little nervous, so let me catch my breath. I will get over it. But yeah, I'm like super happy to be here, right? I am just as excited to be clean today as I was when I got here. I'm gonna cry already. Yeah, I'm like feeling free as fuck, right? Through Narcotics Anonymous, I've been able to like get a life beyond my wildest dreams. You know, I don't really know anyone in here. I don't hardly know anyone in here, so I'll just tell a little bit of my story that, you know, when I was growing up, I grew up in a family that like was from Appalachia. Everyone in my family used, right? Everyone I knew used. I never knew anyone that like got clean. I never knew anyone that didn't, you know, work all week to like drink or like do coke on the weekends. You know, my family members like sold coke out of the trailer park, right? I had a papaw that died of black lung, like working in the coal mines. Like that's the environment that my family came from. I'll say that my parents like wanted a different way of life, so we moved around a lot. I lived in like 30 places before I was in high school, and then we kind of landed in Pennsylvania, and that's kind of where I stuck. I still lived in a household where like my parents openly used drugs, you know. It came a tipping point where, you know, I like grew up during like the opiate boom, I guess, in the 2000s, and that kind of entered my family, and my parents were business owners, and they like lost their house, their cars, their burial plots, right? So that's kind of my story of like where I came from. It was really easy for me to see growing up that like my parents were addicts, right? So it became a little bit easier later in my life to see like how that could happen to me. But for most of my 20s, I wanted to be like a nurse my whole life. You know, I wanted to be like gainfully employed and like take care of myself, and I kind of knew that one day I had this idea that like one day I would just be different, right? I wouldn't be using and like partying and doing all the stuff that I was doing, but I spent like most of my 20s trying to get to that point, right? Like I used all the things, I used like psychiatry, I got a boyfriend that was like a literal Boy Scout. I tried to go to college. I kept getting kicked out of college because like I could not fucking have normal behavior, right? So I spent my 20s thinking like this is a phase, this is fine, this is what young people do, you know. Getting it admitted to college and then getting kicked out over and over again, 3 times really, and my student loans still to this day reflect those failures, right? So I spent a lot of time, you know, going to raves and thinking that it was normal, right? I got away from my parents, so I was like, okay, they're fucked up, they're fucking my lives up, but you know, I'm doing good over here. I was on Suboxone for like 10 years, right, on and off. You know, that's like part of my story. And then at the beginning of the end, I was in Pennsylvania, and the guy that I was dating at the time graduated college. I managed to get an LPN degree while being on maintenance drugs and things like that, trying just like my very best, you know, knowing that I like wanted better for myself and I deserve better and I could do better, but I just like could not figure out like what my fucking problem was, right? I thought there was something wrong with me. I'm morally deficient. I can't keep my hands to myself. I can't attend work regularly. I can't be faithful to the person that I'm in a relationship. I must be a bad person, right? And so I kept trying things. I tried medication. I tried this. We're in Pennsylvania. My boyfriend at the time graduates from college, and he wants to move back to Maryland, where I had met him. Candy flipping at a rave when, you know, and I was in my early 20s. And so we moved back to Maryland. I'm like, here it is, my geographical change. I'm gonna just stop using, you know, I was a bad drug addict, right? I could not make enough money to keep my drug of choice in my body. So I was like using Suboxone during the week. And then when I got paid, I would run for 3 or 4 days and I would be sick because you got to leave a gap, right? I would be sick for a few days and then I would just like use my Suboxone for the rest of the time until I got paid again, right? That becomes unmanageable. That becomes really fucking unmanageable because you mess up the timing and then you're in withdrawal, or it's like you gotta actually pay your phone bill once every few months and then you don't got enough to be high for 3 days. Like, this shit became unmanageable and was unmanageable for a long time, right? So I moved to Maryland. I said, this is my opportunity, right? I'm just gonna stop. Right, I don't know anyone in Maryland. People in Maryland probably don't even do the drug that I'm doing, right? Right. I get here and I overdose immediately, yeah. Right? Because I couldn't find the drug that I was doing, but I found some other shit, right? And that brought me to my first meeting, right? I was desperate. I woke up in the hospital. They cracked my rib, they had Narcan me, you know, and I was like, oh God, I need to do something different. And I had met someone in the rave scene that had gotten a year sober in the other fellowship. And when I had driven to Pennsylvania from Maryland to get my drug of choice, she said, I'll go with you, but we have to stop at my friend's anniversary. And that was my introduction. Because in my family, I had never met anyone that got clean, right? I didn't know that people did that. This was the years you know, I grew up in the 2000s and we had celebrity rehab on MTV. I thought rehab was for rich people, right? I did not know that that was an option for me. So I go to the Serenity Center. I'm like, I don't know what the fuck they're doing in here, but I know like my chest hurts and I can't keep doing this, right? So I end up there and I wish that I could say that that was the end of my using it, and it wasn't, right? But I will say for me, my story is that, I did get a little hope there, right? I got a little hope, and at the time, if you would have asked me, I didn't know what that was. Like, I thought hope was like some live, laugh, love shit that you put on like your grandma's fucking wall, right? Like, I had no concept of like what having a little hope was, because nobody fucking believed in me, right? So at that point, I go to the doctor, and for the first time, I get on a Suboxone program with a physician, right? Up until this point, I was always buying it off the street, and then you like give the little strips back, and they give them to you in like little foil packs because they have to take their strips back to the doctor, right? So I'm paying cash, I'm seeing this doctor, and for a year I decided, you know what, this is my life now. I'm gonna be on maintenance, on paper, right? And if the nursing board finds out, then I'm fucked, right? I just didn't know that like nurses deal with these problems too, right? I still had hope. At this point, I was an LPN and I wanted to be a nurse so bad, right? So I'm on, you know, on Suboxone, I'm paying a crazy amount, right? I'm paying the doctor, I'm paying for the prescription, paying like whatever, a lot. For a year, I'm on it, right? And then I was like, you know what? I'm stable. And I think my higher power for that time period, because I really got a separation in the lifestyle that I was living and using, right? And the chemical, right? I was away from like the calling and copping, although I was using other drugs, just disclaimer, but I was away from like the calling and copping, that 2-week cycle of my paycheck, right? Of being ill. I hadn't felt that desperation, you know, that I have to get a hold of the guy, you know what I mean? So I got a little separation from that. And then a year came and I said, you know what? Feeling myself a little bit. I'm gonna go back to school. I'm gonna get off this Suboxone. I obviously have to take a drug test, so I'm gonna take a half of a half of a half of a half of a half until I'm a fucking millimeter by a millimeter amount of that little strip, right? And I just couldn't fucking not take the millimeter, right? I would get down to the millimeter and I would take a strip because I could not stand how I felt. Right? I could not fucking get off of it, right? And I've experienced that over and over and over again, but for some reason, this time, I kind of knew where to go. I did not really know about Narcotics Anonymous, but I knew that the Serenity Center There was some shit happening over there. I didn't know what was happening, but something was happening, right? So one day I don't know. One day I was just fucking done with it. I was just fucking done with it. I've passed a lot of piss tests that I was lying about, right? Like, I've fake passed a lot of piss tests. But for some reason, this time when I was, like, trying to get into this nursing program, like, I just know good nurses aren't high at work. You know what I mean? Like, good nurse, people that are good at their job are not high at work. So I said, I showed up and I was like, somebody fucking help me. And they did, right? A lot of people helped me. Some people showed up and were like, stop going to this fucking meeting. Go to this meeting. There's some young people over here. There's some people that are like you over here, right? And I met the first person I've ever met in my whole life that had been on Suboxone and is no longer on Suboxone, right? So, yeah, I got clean. And I passed the piss test for the nursing program. And I got in the nursing program. I had like 3 months clean, right? And, you know, I surrendered. And I did not fucking surrender all at once, right? I showed up and I was like, all right, ain't no way that I'm not gonna drink a fucking Budweiser ever again, right? Ain't no way that I'm not gonna like go to raves and do this drug or do that drug, the other drugs that weren't my problem, right? Because obviously I'm chemically addicted, but I can still drink. What else am I gonna do? So I did show up and I said, you know what? I'm just trying to pass this piss test. These people appear to be clean, you know? So let me listen to them. And then after 6 months, I'm gonna do whatever I wanna do, but I won't do opiates, right? And yeah, like I'll have 8 years clean in April, right? So I did show up, I was laughing. I got clean in April, and I have a really old picture that I sent my husband, who was my friend at the time, that in July. So it took me from April to July to flush all my Suboxone. I had like 10 strips in my house until that time because my surrender was really small. My surrender was like, let me get what I want to get by following what these people are saying, and then I'll do whatever I want. But really, what happened is I got like a little bit tricked and I ended up staying and deciding like, oh, my life is fucking better like this. Oh, I do have anxiety and I do kind of still want to kill myself, but I have some hope that like, I don't always have to be that way, right? That some of the people are sharing in the rooms that like they felt the way that I was feeling and they don't fucking feel like that anymore, right? So like, let me just keep going. And then I got into the step work. I didn't believe in God. I did not want anything to do with a higher power or anything like that. But through my surrender, I did decide I do like it when someone's proud of me, or like I like to be like an A student. So I started doing the step work, right? I got a sponsor. I wanted my sponsor to be proud of me. So I'm like doing it. And then all of a sudden I have a higher power. And then all of a sudden I do my third step. And then, you know, I have decided to make a decision to give over my will and my life to that newly found higher power, right? Which, by the way, in the beginning was like really confusing and really difficult for me. I still like struggle. I do not believe in God or religion or anything like that, but I've been able to like come around here and answer some questions and develop a relationship with a higher power for myself that has worked for me up until now, right? So I graduate nursing school, right? Starting to get some like self-worth. I'm like a year in, right? I graduate a little bit over a year clean. Get that hope is like growing. The spiritual principles are starting to get instilled in me, right? The surrender, the willingness, the open-mindedness, right? All through that step work. Because as I'm working on my financial life and my outward life, I'm working on my inner life too by doing the step work. And do I fully believe that there's a higher power at this time? No. Do I think there's a God? Not really. But, you know, I learned to act as if, right? To just have a little bit of hope and say, well, what if there is, right? And apply those principles in my life. And that has served me, right? So I graduate. I'm afraid to graduate because my parents are going to come to my graduation. And both of my parents are using addicts. And people from NA showed up for me, right? I became an RN. So a lot of people from NA came to my graduation and were proud of me. It still makes me want to cry. It's like 7 years ago. But like having the ability to like share with people, like, hey, I'm afraid to have these interactions with these people that are like, you know, my parents that are still using addicts that are very triggering for me. I used with my parents first and I used with them the most, you know? So people showed up for me and I was able to like, wow, I'm a fucking nurse. I'm a nurse and I'm going to work. I ain't stealing any drugs. I'm of sound mind and body. I'm showing up, I'm helping people. I could get a really good job immediately, right? That's what I'm telling myself. And yeah, that's not what happened, right? By this point, I had enough humility. I accepted a really bad job. I started working at this nursing home in Sandtown. And I was in a really like dangerous place, taking care of dangerous people. And yeah, I was like able, because of Narcotics Anonymous, to just like do something that I thought I was better than, right? To be frank, I thought I was better than working in a nursing home. I had been doing that for many years before as an LPN and a CNA. And I've just like, I have been rewarded in this program by doing things that I thought were below me. And by having some humility and showing up grateful. And I didn't have to stay there forever, right? I ended up getting a job at Shock Trauma. And I ended up working there for a while, and I worked there during COVID. When I worked there for 6 months before COVID started. And I had just moved on my own. I lived by myself. I had lived in... I had lived in a house of people in recovery up until then, right? Not a recovery house, because I was living with all men both times, but they were all in recovery. And at this point, I had moved on my own. All the meetings had closed down. I'm on my sixth step. I had a patient at Shock Trauma that had murdered another one of my patients, right, with a pen by stabbing her in the face, right? I had some trauma. I had some secondary trauma. I'm on my sixth step. I've gone through a breakup. I'm living on my own. All the meetings shut down, right? So, you know, I'm so grateful for Narcotics Anonymous, because when that happened and I moved into the ICU to work in the hospital, I was not accountable to any of the drugs anymore, right? They moved our entire unit into a negative pressure unit, and there was no counting bags of fentanyl. There was no counting pills. You know, usually you're counting in and counting out. During a mass casualty emergency, you don't do that anymore. So I'm grateful that by that point in my recovery, I had had enough spiritual principles practiced and poured into me, an example shown to me from people in the rooms, that I had enough integrity that I didn't steal anything. Right? I didn't steal anything. I didn't want to steal anything. I was going to meetings in the parking lot, right, after work. One day I accidentally, truly accidentally, left with a bottle of Dilaudid in my pocket. And I had the wherewithal. I didn't even want to fucking use it, right? I called my boss and I said, "What? Hold me accountable. What do I do with this?" Right? She told me, throw it away. But that is not who I am. That is not me, right? That has happened to me by, like, learning and desiring freedom, right? I know if I do the next right thing and I have integrity and I have honesty and self-honesty, most importantly, right? I can continue to be free and get more free, right? Working the steps around here has given me freedom with the promise of more freedom, right? That's why I don't shoplift anymore. I'm good at shoplifting and I do like doing it. I do like fucking doing it. But I don't do it anymore because I like to feel free. I like to know I don't have to wash my back when I go into Target because they got me 10 times and they're trying to get me on a felony. You know what I mean? So I work at the hospital. I see 300 people die in like 3 or 4 months, right? I see people mangled, all of this shit. I'm going to meetings in the parking lot. I'm tired. They're making me work day shift and night shift in the same week, and I'm fucking exhausted, and I'm away from my network. The people that were in my network were afraid to be around me because I work in the hospital, right? So I come to the realization one day, I make a med error, right? And I come to the realization one day, all these motherfuckers that work in the hospital are on Adderall. That's why they're not tired. That's why they're not making mistakes, right? So it gets in my head, right? And I'm like, oh, I fucking like Adderall. Every time I work a night shift, I'm like, this would be a lot easier with some Adderall, you know? I go to the doctor, I get prescribed Adderall. Because I'm like, I need help. You know what I mean? I need help. I'm depressed or whatever the fuck. Okay, I got 5 minutes. You know, I go to meetings in the parking lot at St. Bart's and I share about it. I see how it feels coming out, right? I see how it feels coming out. I see, talk to other people about it, and I decide, with some other reasons, I decide to leave that job. Even though I thought that's what I always wanted. I wanted the prestige. And I wanted people to be like, oh, wow, you work at Shock Trauma? That's impressive, right? And that does feel good. But I decided that if I'm going to continue to be clean, right, that I have to, like, form my life around my recovery and not my recovery around my life, right? That, like, maybe that's not the place for me. Maybe that's, like, not where I can be the most free that I want to be. And that is my number one priority, is freedom, right? And I'm not talking about, like, I'm talking about inner freedom. I'm talking about, like, not being afraid of authority and not being afraid of my peers and not being afraid to walk in a room because I'm being judged. Like, I'm a good person today, right? I've learned to the best of my ability, practice these spiritual principles of unity and freedom and, you know, doing the work. I'm on my second round of steps, and it's like I still have a lot to do, right? So I say all that to say that, like, yeah, I, like, can't get enough. I can't get enough. I want more. I want to be able to, like, uncover all the ways in which I harm myself and the people around me and live in a way that I can be proud of, right? So I left that job, and I, you know, got a job that is more conducive to my recovery, and try to have humility and, like, thinking, you know, I'm a person first and a nurse second, right? So I wasn't tracking my time, so now I'm at that. I'm not going to take more time, but I love you guys so much, right? I get the support and the love and, you know, the things that I always wanted around here that I really never thought that I could get from other people. So just happy to be here, so thanks for asking me to share.
Thank you for sharing.
All right, now I'd like to introduce our second speaker, Chip.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm Chip, I'm an addict.
Hey, Chip.
Hi, family. Thank you, Amber, you were awesome. I'm grateful to be here at this convention. I'm grateful that someone thought enough of me that I had something to share about recovery, about this new way of life. And, you know, I stand on the shoulders of my predecessors. I didn't come in here and kick the disease in the ass and, you know, have all the success. I came in here completely broken, and I didn't know I was broken. Being broken was normal to me. And when I think about the topic of a spiritual principle a day keeps the defects away, I didn't come into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous working spiritual principles. You know, a liar, a cheat, a thief, a major manipulator. Man, I would get more resentful when you outmaneuvered me. Dude, I was pissed at your ass. You are this no good. The nerve of you. The nerve of you. I come from West Baltimore. I come from a family of nine. Can you imagine my mother and father had nine kids? Four girls, I have four older sisters who seemed like they followed directions. You know, my mother would just look at them and they would just straighten up and go in line, you know, and then I have four younger brothers and I was the only boy, and you know, my sisters were at home You know, they were saying, well, this is a democracy, so whoever has the most votes gets to do whatever. You know, so it was like, I'm watching TV, and they're watching Search for Tomorrow and all these soap operas. I'm like, what the fuck? You know, it was like, I wanted to go outside and play. It wasn't an environment set up for me. And so I acted out. Right from the without drugs. I'm going to tell you, spiritual principles don't just apply to addicts. Spiritual principle applies to everybody. And they're not just people in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous that work spiritual principles. So you, I can make give you a suggestion. You may want to find some other people outside the rooms that also work in spiritual principles. And spiritual principles have absolutely nothing to do with religion. Nothing. They're atheists that work spiritual principles. And it was important that I come in here and I understood the message of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, because I acted out before, and it was important for me when I came into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous to have my predecessors to talk about the underlying pain. Because somebody who uses like I use isn't feeling really good about themselves. And you could come in here and just do some surface stuff here and feel as if, you know, this program doesn't work, but it was the underlying pain that caused me to use. And I got the opportunity to get a sponsor here in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. I got a chance to come in and hear my predecessors come up here and talk about their underlying pain and what they did to be able to have a life worth living, how to work spiritual principles so that to not to negate that pain, but to accept that pain and have a life worth living, because I didn't know how to do that before I came to rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. I knew how to self-medicate. Even before the drugs, you know, like I said, if it's a family of nine, we ain't got no money. Okay, so I got on some fish head tennis shoes and some fake Lee jeans. My mother cuts my hair, so I got an afro that sits to the side. I go to this Catholic school, and I come home to play. And these girls, they know I'm a Catholic school guy, and they come up and grind on me and tell me that I'm scared of pussy, and so I'm a ball of not enough. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. At 10, not that a 10-year-old should know anything about some pussy, but my mind, because I have the mind of an addict, I'm obsessive even before the drugs. I'm obsessive about what I don't have and what I perceive you to have. And I'm faking like I'm not, like, all hurt up. I'm faking like I'm not insecure. I'm faking like I don't feel less than. And it's all bubbling up here. So I couldn't wait till, you know, somebody taught me how to smoke weed. I couldn't wait, because all of a sudden, and let me tell you, I lived in Walbrook Junction, and once again, my parents, I didn't think they knew it. Man, I just lost confidence in them, because everything they were talking about was stuff that I couldn't relate to. They would say stuff like it's an inside job. And I'm looking at all of these cars, and I'm looking at all these clothes, and I'm looking at all of the stuff that I don't have. You know, they talk about it's not nonviolent. So I'm walking to school, and public school boys are beating up kids and taking their lunch money, and I'm holding all this in. I'm in fear. And I'm masking it with my male puffery. And I have no other outlet but to mask it. Self-medicate. And I wasn't tall enough. I wasn't smart enough. I wasn't rich enough. There was never enough food. There was never enough attention. I was a ball of not enough. And I didn't even know it. I didn't know it until I came to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous and I heard my predecessors stand here and tell my story. Talk about my emotions and my feelings. Because where I come from, men don't talk about feelings. You suck it up. Men don't cry. Men fix everything. Men know everything. And I mess it because I know on the inside that I don't know everything. And so I start using at 13 and I'm making my life unmanageable. I mean, I have no social skills at all. I don't handle no well. You know what I mean? So my relationships really aren't working out for me. Do you know what I mean? I don't know about you, but I take no personally, okay? I didn't understand it. You know, 'cause the core of this disease is total self-centeredness. So I don't understand it. Everybody is no. I hear Chip says his no because Chip's defective. And so I know how to shut down. You know, I know how to act out. I know how to take my toys home and not play with your ass anymore. Mm-hmm. Whether it's physical, emotionally, or mentally. I could be in a room. I could sit there, nine of us. I'm in a room with my brothers and sisters. I'm in another world. Because it was safe there for me. And what life is really about, it is not the money, it's not the property, it's not the prestige. I've been around here long enough to realize that, you know, I chased all of that and it never fills that void in my stomach, the gut feeling. It's about relationships, and I didn't have the skills to have a healthy relationship. I didn't have the skills to have a sustaining relationship because it was all about me and I didn't even know it was all about me. So I want to read some definitions because I think it's important. And when we talk about spiritual principles, spiritual principles are core values and ethical practices such as honesty, humility, acceptance, surrender. And they all encompass all of that. There's so many spiritual principles, but they all evolve around love. Mm-hmm. All love-based. And character defects or fear-based, anger, resentment, hate. And so it was important when I came here, I got a sponsor. Because I thought I had a drug problem. Because that's the surface stuff. It's not, that doesn't deal with the underlying pain that I've been masking for decades. I got a sponsor. A man. It was important that I got a man because a man's fear is a little bit different from a woman's fear. Mm-hmm. Men, we're a little different from women. I don't know whether you noticed that or not, but we're hard headed. You know, we're stubborn. We isolate by ourselves. We want to do it on our own. We want to go conquer some shit. You know what I mean? We want to go talk about stuff we don't know nothing about. We talk about cars and women. And we don't know nothing about y'all women. I'm telling y'all, you all are totally different from us. Totally different. My fear comes out in my anger. I get aggressive with your ass till you put me in check. Then I'll become passively aggressive. You know what I mean? And then when you put me in check with that, I immediately shut down because that's all I know. That's all I know. That's all I was in my toolbox when I came to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. I didn't know anything about working spiritual principles. I know everything was about finding ways and means to get what I want. And that had nothing to do with drugs. The drugs use was when I couldn't get what I wanted. Or you didn't make me feel the way I wanted you to make me feel. And so it was important that I got somebody around here who knew what they knew about the disease of addiction. I didn't know anything about the disease of addiction. I came in educated and I knew nothing about obsessive thought process. I thought obsession was like this cologne that you wore. I didn't know anything about. I don't know about you all. Did you use the word obsession? And when you were, and I didn't use obsession. I didn't understand that when somebody has a thought in their mind, a normal person to think it and it leaves them. With me, I think it and it stays there. So much that I'm emotionally unavailable. I'm projecting this impending doom or this impending success, and it's all bullshit. And I'm paralyzed in that thought, and I can't get out of it. I I didn't think I was obsessive. I just thought I thought more than everybody else. I didn't know that was the. I didn't know it was a character defect. I had no idea that it wasn't normal. That it was abnormal. I had no idea that I was compulsive. I just thought I was more consistent than everybody else. I had no idea that I was like this robot, you know. I thought it, I got it, I did it. I didn't know that till I got a chance to do some my step work where I heard my predecessors talk about that. I didn't think I was totally self-centered. I'm the biggest manipulator. I will help you, but it's about me. Trust me. I never check why I do things, my motives. Why I do what I do, why I say what I say. Narcotics Anonymous has opened all of that up to me and my step work. And the reason that we do step work is, once again, is it introduces us to the disease of addiction. I didn't know, like I said, I just thought I used drugs. I didn't know I was obsessive, compulsive, self-centered in all of my affairs. It introduced me to me. Because the step work is about, I can't recover with your step work. It has to be personal. We all use totally differently. Some people may use sex or money or property or prestige or food or gambling or video games. We're all different, but we're all the same. And I got a chance to come here and get a sponsor, and he slowly took me back, because he was saying, Chip, we're changing everything about you. We want to change how you make decisions. Because before, the disease of addiction was making my decision for me, and I had no choice. Because I didn't know that I could do something different, or that I could be something different. Or I could think something different, or I could feel something different, or how to walk through fear and insecurity. I never walked through it ever in my life. Whenever I came to something fearful, I became insecure about, it had me stay stuck, and I never got the other side of it. And my predecessors came here, and they taught me, they held me by my hand, and taught me how to work spiritual principles and walk through fears and insecurities. So the reason that we do step work is, once again, it introduces us to us. And then it introduces us to the solution to the problem, which are the spiritual principles. Which, for the first time in my life, when I'm backed up against the wall and I'm feeling this dis-ease in my head, in my gut, in my jaw, in my heart, I can say, Chip, what spiritual principle applies in this situation? Because the solution is always spiritual in nature. There's never enough money, property, prestige, pussy, attention. It's a spiritual principle that applies in the situation that I'm in. And the issue for me is, am I willing to work that spiritual principle? Am I willing to do my step work? Because each step gives a different spiritual principle. Or each step goes further and deeper into honesty or acceptance or surrender or humility or hope or faith or trust or integrity. Each one of those spiritual principles apply in every situation that I'm going through. The answer is always because I am a spiritual entity with a physical, mental, and emotional component. I'm a spiritual nature, and I haven't been spiritually fed because I know how to feed myself. That's not where I went. I don't know about you. When you work up in the morning or you something's going on with you, I don't know about you. But when it's me, I don't ask. I didn't know what spiritual principle applies in this situation, Chip. That was not what the thing that comes to my mind is, how can I get what I want as fast as I can? And what do I have to do to get it? That's how I think. How can I get through this pain as quick as possible? That's how I process information. And Narcotics Anonymous through a sponsorship, through a network of people, have allowed me for the first time to do something different. I had no choice before because I didn't know. And so I understand why a lot of people don't do network here. I get it. I didn't do just surface stuff. I'm not going to get it because you know why? Because you never have to accept personal responsibility. Somebody says, well, why did you do that? I don't know. Once you do step work, you know. You know why you do what you do. And you know it's you, and you know it's not somebody else. You know it's you. And the drugs are gone. And it's still you. So I understand why they don't want to do step work. Or they want to run through the step work. There's so many spiritual principles. I don't know about you, but with the stick, it took me time to get through the steps because I needed to change. I mean, I came in here, I had three kids. I had none of them trusted me. I had lost trust in my employment situation. Nobody trusted Chip. And you know why? Because Chip was untrustable. Anybody in their right mind wouldn't, because I was inconsistent. And it took a long time for them to, for me to earn the trust back. And I never want to be that person again. I came to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous desperate. And desperate is not a spiritual principle. Desperate is not love-based. Desperation is fear-based. Desperation is the normal way that people learn is in a situation like this. Desperation is learning with somebody with puts a gun to your head. And you don't even understand. You just do it. You just do it. You just do it like an animal. And I never want to be desperate again. That's why I come to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous with great humility. And all humility means is I am teachable today. I know stuff that I don't know I need. So I listen to when you all come up here and you speak. I listen to everything you say because I don't know what it's going to apply to me. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it. I give you an example. Somebody was talking about stuff. I remember I may have first year and somebody was in this room boo-hooing about that dog died. I'm like, what the fuck? What the fuck? Totally self-centered. People are dying all over the place. The dog. Until I understood and had empathy to understand that that dog was a part of their family, Chip. See, I'm totally self-centered. If it didn't make any sense to me, there was no open-mindedness with me. If it didn't fit into this little square, it didn't make any sense to me. Which means I'm limited in my ability to learn until I learn how to open my mind to other people's perspectives, other people's pain, other people's experiences. And there's freedom in the spiritual principles. Freedom in the spiritual principles. And so a lot of people, like I said, only do like step work with the spiritual principles. But there's a whole separate group of spiritual principles in the traditions. And they are just as important as the ones in the steps. The spiritual principles in the steps are here so I don't commit suicide. So I can feel comfortable in my own skin. That I can give myself a break because I'm not perfect. This is practice for me. Yeah. I don't work spiritual principles perfectly. Nobody does. Nobody's asking. It's just show up for practice. See, I'm the type, I want to show up for the game. But in practice, I'm like, oh, Lord, here we go. You know? But the traditions have a totally separate set of spiritual principles. And a lot of people refuse to, but the spiritual principles in the traditions teach me how to commit, how not to commit homicide. Because I have a problem, I have two problems. I have a problem feeling comfortable in my own skin, and I have a problem being around you all and letting you go through your character defects and let you go through your life making process and still staying unified with you. Because I want to control, again, fear. I want to control your stuff. tell you where you should be in your journey of life, in your process, what you should have. You know what I mean? And that's why it's important that I come here and I practice unity and I practice fidelity. There's so many different spiritual principles in the traditions that allow me to continue to stay connected to you, because the disease of addiction wants me to go directly to isolation, away from all of you and have no connection whatsoever. He wants me to character assassinate you because you have character defects, and take advantage of your character defects. Mm-hmm. And there's no spiritual principle that allows me to do that. So, I'm telling you, I'm not perfect. Dude, I'm just telling you, dude. I just got back. I just gonna leave with this. Now, I'll be clean. It'll be 25 years, hopefully, in August. And like I said, I wake up in the morning praying for God to help me. Help me. Help me. I make that first connection, conscious contact, first thing in the morning, because I know I need help. And the first thing is my mind isn't spiritual in nature. Okay, I don't know about you. I know where mine goes. Mine goes through some dark, sick places, okay? So I'm just, I got went away to Louisiana with my vacation. My family loves me now. They want me to come down. You know what I mean? They live in Louisiana. I'm like, dude, I'm they do anything to get out of this cold weather. And so I went to Mardi Gras, and I got a chance to go to meet my home group is still online now. So I love being around my people. So so I got a chance to go to a meeting every day. Nobody was asking me to fix anything, talk anywhere. I could just be just an addict in the room. And I'm coming back home. It's like 80 degrees last Saturday from Houston. I'm at the airport. I'm on the plane, and my seat is beside this woman who has a crying baby, right? And I'm like, oh, fuck. And she looks at me, she says, sir, you know, my husband is seated up in seat number 5. If you would like to switch with, and I made it seem like, Mike, I'm working spiritual principles. Of course, ma'am, I would love to give your husband coming. I'll take this pain. You know, I'll regretfully, I'll do that. I'll step up and help you with that. You know what I mean? So I go and I said, sir, I think we're switching seats. I asked for the text him and let him know. And I had to move my bag and my luggage, because I was like back in 19 and he was up in 5. And everybody had been on the plane, and they were overhead bins that were still open. But when I went there were none there. There was one open in the first seat. And so I go over to put it up. And the guy who works on the plane was like, "Well, you can't put it there. You gotta find some place back here." I'm like, "But nobody is coming on the plane. It's open." He said, "You have to put it someplace that's near you." I said, "This is seat 1. I'm in 5." And he was like, "No, you can't do it." And I got pissed. I just got home from vacation, and I'm like pissed at this motherfucker. Oh, everything, the good feeling about trying to do something, and then all of a sudden I switched just like that, and he didn't take my peace. I gave it to him. I gave it to him. And I was so mad at myself, because once again, at the end, when you got off, you know, he looked me in the eye and said, have a nice day, and I didn't even look at him. I was like... So I have so much work. I have so much work, because it's all about relationships and how you feel about yourself, how you react to stuff. I have a choice that I didn't have a choice before, because I didn't know any better. I know now because of Narcotics Anonymous. Thanks for letting me share.